Good? Okay. All right. Victor and I are here to talk about the last mile. And actually, that's a really fancy title to talk about the work that we're doing in the DevOps space and how we're, how we're basically moving that effort forward. And Victor is a group program manager from System Center, and I am Tracy Truin. I'm from Visual Studio. So, can you click? I don't think our clicker is working. It'll be the. So, for the agenda, we're going to talk a little bit about DevOps and why is this working now? Like, why is it the time now for us to actually really move this effort forward? And then we're going to talk about the challenges that that are actually inherently in the systems that we have today. And then Victor and I are going to walk you through a demo of our current shipping bits for the integration of System Center and Visual Studio. And then we'll try and leave some time at the end for Q&A. So one of the things I did is this is a quote that I pulled when my own team, actually, when we first started talking about DevOps. And my particular development team has been using Agile for quite a while. I think it's just like normal. People do that because it makes sense. But when we started talking about DevOps, they were like, God dang, what is this thing? What is this thing? And I said, guys, just think about it. It's just Agile, like the last mile. Like, we're just going to keep extending. We're good at removing the friction, now in our development process, and we're just trying to get to the next place so that we can get past operations and then get our code out there. And especially for us now, as we're looking at building services, we inside Microsoft are actually experiencing that that pain as well, which is actually good news for most of you guys, is that when we're experiencing pain, it actually makes us move even faster. So Patrick Dubois said it's not just about the development and operations collaborating. It's getting every silo, every part of the business, of the enterprise and the organization collaborating to meet the business goals. And my favorite part about this is the meeting the business goals. It means that we can actually join at a place that's common as opposed to each of our agendas and actually really drive to a common goal that makes sense for our business. The next. Now, just for nostalgic sake, I actually also pulled a quote. How many of you guys heard Bob Muglia talk about dynamic IT? Okay. Sam's laughing because we lived through this many turns of the crank, and we had to go in every month, and Bob would say, what are you guys doing for dynamic IT? So I pulled this quote out, and so it was from 2007, which is about the same time that Patrick Dubois, put his definition of DevOps on the map, and said, with dynamic IT, we're bringing together the capabilities of the core infrastructure and the application and development platforms to help customers build integrated systems that will make IT a stronger partner to the business. So that's actually kind of similar to what Patrick Dubois said, only in Microsoft speak. So I actually just realized when I pulled these quotes yesterday is that's why the Patrick Dubois one makes sense, and this is why none of us ever understood what Bob wanted. But Bob did actually have the foresight, and we actually have been working on this for quite some time. But there is some inherently some issues and problems to get through. So we'll go to the next slide. So why now? Why is it that although in 2007 that we started down this path, why is it that it's now so important? The fact is that the business is actually driving it. As Patrick Dubois said, is like when the business goals start to put the pressure on, then everybody has to start to line up. So there's the new technologies enabling value opportunities. I think Etsy is actually a fabulous example, right? Like they came from, it's a great example of how you can actually start a business on the internet with very low barrier to entry and start to threaten, established businesses. And so these guys, most businesses are very much aware of that and that they need to keep moving forward. There's also a much more of a desire to touch directly to the consumer. And so that actually is starting to drive new implementations and such that the business just has to respond. The mobility and devices proliferation, I don't know how many of you guys are seeing that. Like, this is the bring your own device to work thing, you know? That is actually putting a tremendous amount of pressure, not only on IT, but operations, trying to keep the system secure and moving forward. Cloud computing, the cloud, it's huge, you know, barrier, removing, you know, a lot of the barriers to entry, removing friction in the system so that they can actually scale, expand much, much more quickly. And then, as I mentioned, there's just the, you know, staying in the game. Like, you know, it's a race, and you got to stay ahead of the race. So these are the questions on the business. So we go to the next. And so how does that become IT's problem? Well, this is sort of how it translates, you know, to IT, is their business is the business, right, is to support it. So they've got to take the business forward, so they're under that pressure. They're faster time to market. They're basically, people are saying, no, it's not okay for you to take months and months and months to deploy. We got to get this out now. And so there is this desire, this continuous value delivery. And at the same time, it's trying to balance agility, quality, scale, and compliance all at the same time is delivering. So there's actually, you know, a lot of things that are moving against each other in that process. And maximizing, you know, the economies of scale, of course, is also another focus and pressure that they're seeing. So, oh. My clicker's not working very well, sorry. Okay, so those are all the drivers that are you know, making this really coming to a head in the last year or so. I think for I don't know how many of you guys have really seen this surge in the last, you know, year or so in terms of the pressures you're feeling. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, the problem is that our systems actually are not, you know, not quite there yet to support this. And so here are the friction, you know, the friction that ends up happening in the system is we have isolated operations, tools, and workflows. We have users detecting, you know, defects in production that we can't reproduce. And so the incidents are hard to debug for us, you know, as developers, and for operations to even give any useful information to a developer to actually fix. And so it results in no actionable feedback. It ends up in this no repro, I can't make this happen situation. And so resulting in really long fix times, which then, you know, causes it to take a long time to fix, long deployment cycle times, because now operations says, like, gosh, dang it, this has taken so long for you guys to fix. And now I'm supposed to trust you that you fixed it. Yeah, that's not happening. So it's a self-perpetuating cycle. So what can we do to actually, you know, this is what our focus is. How do we remove this type of friction? So we go to the next. And the other part is that this is also a people issue, right? This is, you know, two different focus and two different points of view, so that have essentially misaligned goals and priorities, and they each have their own way of viewing the world. In development, the developer's job is to change. By definition, they're like changing every day. It's like, gosh, hey, let's just keep pulling, especially, you know, like now that we're all agile and we're constantly delivering value, you gotta be shippable every month, right? So that's development's perspective. On the other hand, the operation's like, no, don't change anything. Just leave it, because that's good. Life's good if we don't change things. And then, you know, of course, as a developer, you know, when we see problems, right, we have one hammer. That's to fix code. And so we have a desire to take that hammer, and we want to attach, we want to see the problem, we want to change the code. On the other hand, when you've, you know, from an operations perspective, they have several hammers. Actually, none of those hammers are code. It's the, I can recycle the app pool, I can reboot the machine, I can take it out. It's like whatever it takes to make that problem go away. Who cares, like, whether the code gets fixed, as long as I can keep my system up, my service up. And then there's also even a time frame, like how, you know, the rate at which developers think of time and versus operations as well. So even in spite of the fact that we're all, you know, on shorter cycles, we think more in times. I don't know, do most of you guys do like three-week, four-week sprints? I don't know. What's comp? Yeah, 2 weeks? Yeah. Even if you go to 1 week, right? You know, this is that a 1 week time frame versus this guy, and let's say that this person's even like a pretty sucky operations person is going for 3 9s, that's 43 minutes a month. Like, that's just very, very different, you know, perspectives. And so we're, you know, you're dealing with that and trying to bring those priorities or goals and priorities together. So what's the solution? I think most of you, you know, shared artifacts or, you know, every, you know, operate or configuration as code is pretty important. So we're actually sharing the same artifacts, configuration scripts, and so on. Automation, removing friction wherever possible through automation. And also coming to a common goal. So a common, you know, MTTR and between dev and ops that they're both responsible for, and to really fostering the idea that we all go over the finish line together. Nobody wins, nobody gets to finish first. We all go together. So we're putting money where our mouth is on this. And when we're gonna be going through what we have done so far, and it gives you a hint kind of the investments we're making and where we're going in terms of us actually enabling the DevOps methodology. So we're going to show you some web tests, the shared artifacts in terms of web tests, sharing IntelliTrace information and logging information between System Center and Visual Studio, automation, being able to coordinate between our workflows, between build and System Center Orchestrator. And then also showing how we can foster that communication and gain visibility both between operations and dev and vice versa using the TFS connector that we've shipped last year. So with that, we're going to shift into
into a demo that I'm about to show. we just, as we are spinning up machines, we're confirming that the demo is actually in the right state. And now it is. So my name is Viktor Mushkaitin, and I'll be acting as an ops person. And
go stand over here.
So let me switch to our demo rig.
Could you break it?
So what I will be starting with, I'll be starting with System Center. How many of you have heard about System Center? Wow. Okay.
You didn't ask them how many use it.
How many, okay. How many of you actually used it? That's, okay.
Holy cow. That's the most
hands
we've ever seen.
That's great. So if you look back in 2010, System Center, in end of 2010, in reality in System Center 2012, we released, we started moving in towards application management space. We acquired in 2010 a company called AviCode. I don't know, have you heard about AviCode? Some of you, okay. I remember it was exactly October 5th. I was one of the founders and CTO of that company. So. When Microsoft acquired AviBeats, we started moving towards application management, application performance management. And in 2020, we completely integrated that into Operations Manager product system.
Sorry about that.
Do you want to connect to that machine?
Oh, hold on. Just one more technical. Which one is that? This one?
Top one.
Okay. Okay, I will connect to the right rig. Okay, if I can type my password correctly. Ooh. Oops.
Now they know.
Yeah. Here we go. Whew. So let me just clear this alert view. So the point is that this is Ops Manager view. And Ops guys are live and breathe by looking at the essentially alerts, problems. And just in a nutshell, what Ops Manager does, it does four things. Just four. I'm oversimplifying. First, it does the discovery of various components out of the enterprise. So if you have, applications installed in staging and prod and development, it can discover those pieces. And if your application contains of multiple tiers, it can discover all those components. That's number one. Number two, it can collect some perf metrics or events from your applications, from event log or from custom logs. Number three, it can generate alerts. So very simple, if your CPU is higher than 80%, then generate alerts. More complicated, if you have a custom health state, your failure that you instrumented and through instrumentation wrote into your event log, it can read it and escalate it to operations folks so they know that your application is sick. That's three. And four, which is kind of important, if you want to change any configuration, any monitoring config, it can send that configuration to appropriate machines. For example, you probably don't monitor your staging with the same settings as your production. Okay, so you need to be able to essentially manage those configs. And those are four things that Ops Manager can do for you. Okay, and what we've done in 2012, we basically allowed Ops guys to discover your .NET applications out there, and configure basic monitoring. I wouldn't call it basic, but configure the basic health model for that applications. And how would I do that? First, I would go as an ops person. I would go to authoring, and we implemented series of wizard where, in this particular case, I can go to, actually, instead of going through the whole wizard, what I can do is I probably can open up a configured Fabricom Fiber wizard. So I can go to the wizard. And as a result of this wizard, I can pick which endpoint I want to monitor. So for example, if I want to add some endpoints, you see this machine has a bunch of applications components installed. And as you see, we installed TFS here, Orchestrator, some Microsoft Ops Manager. So it discovered everything that is installed on this machine. Then what I can do is I can pick components that I want to monitor, and I can define what is my, let's say, alerting threshold. For example, every time then my performance is slower than 5 seconds, I want to know about it. Or every time when there is an exception, there is a failure, I want to know about it. So as an ops guy, using those high-level kind of terms, I can define health state model for my application. And every time when my application is failing or performing slow, I will be able to collect the data and generate an alert. So let me show you what does it mean. So here's, I don't want to save anything. So here's my Fabricom Firebird applications. As you see that it's a typical web app. And for the most part, it works. So if I click on customers or on employees, or if I click on reports, oops. So reports aren't working, right? This is a typical failure. It's not that my whole server is down, okay, when I have to collect the crash dump. It's a particular feature of an app that is not working. Have you seen those kind of things? Have you experienced those? Okay, I guess it's somewhat relevant, right? And these are exactly the failures that now System Center Operations Manager can detect. And as an ops person, what I can do is I can go again to my monitoring pane, look at my alerts, and here go. I have my alert. Now, if you look, and again, as an ops person, I'm reading this alert that Fabricom Fiber production, which is my production instance, is failing with, wow, null reference exception, object reference not set. That's pretty scary for me, I guess for you too. And it's pretty tricky to debug. I mean, when object reference not set, I have no clue which objects where it's not set. And as an ops person, I clearly know, even though it's our problem, but Tracy would have to fix it, okay? So what I can do is I can now escalate it to engineering. So it's now will be sent to to TFS. So what will happen is we establish a sync between between Ops Manager and TFS. So now as an ops person, when I see a problem that have to be addressed by development team, what I can do, I can just escalate it to engineering. And that sync will take all the data that we collected and create an alert. And in a second, what you will see, here we go, you see this ticket ID. That's a very fundamental thing, because now what we've done, we've connected the alert that we collected from the operations with an artifact from development, with a ticket ID. And Tracy later will show you how she would be dealing with those type of problems from development standpoint. But those are not the only issues. I mean, that's kind of obvious thing. When something isn't working, and we were able to detect that through essentially exception monitoring and collect the call stack and everything that you will see pretty soon. In some cases, you have a logical problem, right? And those are very hard to debug, usually. For example, if I go back to my application, and I go to my customers, this is my customer list, right? And let me try to edit Maria. Strange, huh? Antonio. Maybe that's a glitch. Okay, let me do it again. I want to do Maria. Still Antonio, right? So something isn't, first of all, it's not failing, but it's not, clearly it's not right. And that's tough to debug. So in these kind of cases, what you need to actually much deeper tracing of the application. And in order to do that, what we've established between System Center and Visual Studio, we integrated IntelliTrace debugging. So now what I can do as an ops person, I can go to my tool, Ops Manager, and I can look at all the endpoints that we've discovered. And in this particular case, this is my endpoint, Fabricom Fiber. And what I can do is, oops, I can start IntelliTrace collection. And this is pretty smart. I mean, if you would have, let's say, load balanced tiers with 20 nodes, you'd be able to pick which node you want to enable IntelliTrace, because in order to enable IntelliTrace, we bounce the process. So in this particular case, I'm attaching the IntelliTrace. And the next thing I do is I want to go through the flow again. So I'm going to my customers. It takes, sure?
Was that a remote attachment?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's why I said one of the value of Ops System Center Ops Manager is that it has a topology and it can put, config, make some changes to the things that are running over there. It was remote attachment, okay? Even though right now, for the demo purposes, everything's running on one rig. So here we go. I have my Fabric on Fiber back. And again, I'm going to Maria. And I see Antonio. So clearly, it's wrong. So now, I was able to repro issue in my code. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a snapshot. I want to collect the snapshot. And technically, you can collect multiple snapshots with this if you want, if you are not sure if you capture the problem. Okay. At the end, after it's done collecting the snapshot, I want to switch back to from the IntelliTrace mode to operations mode. And that's what I'm doing. So, and let me show you what I, as an ops person, would get. Again, back into active alerts. Here we go. Another alert. And that alert basically indicates me that, hey, the snapshot has been collected. And now I can escalate the same way as I was escalating the failure. I can escalate this alert, essentially the fact that we collected snapshot, to the development. Here we go. What I'm going to do is I'm going to assign to engineering. And in a second, that problem also got transferred to engineering team. So from the ops perspective, I'm done. I was able to, A, detect a failure, automatically collect all the problems and send it over. And B, I was able to help our developers to collect more data about a particular logical issue, hard to debug issue from production. And I was able to also escalate that problem to Tracy's team, to the development team. And at this point, I'm done for now. So Tracy.
All right.
Sure. So that's why, if you notice, the way I did it, we switched back to operational monitoring.
The question was what the impact of IntelliTrace is on the performance on the production server.
So there is an impact, clearly, because A, we are collecting way more information. Essentially, for every entry point, we're capturing stuff. That's number one. Then the impact on the CPU, impact on the size of the snapshot. And that's why what I did, if you noticed, I always turn back into the operational monitoring, because that impact is under 5%. Okay? So, and therefore, if you noticed, when I was turning on IntelliTrace, there was a list of node I can turn it on for. So if you have 20 servers, you can pick a server that you can take out of rotation using, I don't know, F5, whatever, and do your testing on that thing, okay, to collect it.
Can you script that in and out of that server? Can that be added in as a step when you
say? Yes, we have a PowerShell APIs to do scripting, and as a matter of fact, we'll be later talking about the automation. So I'll answer in more details a little bit later.
Does it grab the same information that like a tester would grab if he was doing some kind of coded UI or something testing?
Mm-hmm. Watch Tracy. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. So what I now have is that Victor's given me a call, and he's told me that we have a couple of issues. And he's told me that we have an exception that he found, as well as something that looks like a logic bug. So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to take a look at that first issue that was raised, which is the exception. And I'm going to open that here. And I'm going to close this down. And I can see that there's an exception that's been had. And I can go over to my attachments. And I can see that I've got an IntelliTrace log from that first exception. So I'm going to go ahead and open that. And
does that require an
alternate to read? Yes. So what I have now is I can see, and for those of you guys who've already used IntelliTrace, you can see that this is a very narrowed down, very specific IntelliTrace log. So I'm able to see very quickly that I've got a null reference exception, and I can double click on that and immediately get to, sorry, let's just get this down here. I go right to the line of code of where I was having this problem. And so basically what's happened is that I've got a null customer here because I made a naive assumption that for every employee that they'd have customers assigned to them. And turns out we hired a new person and they don't have any employees assigned to them. So in this case, I was looking for all the customers associated with an employee and I didn't handle the null case. And I can actually go up the stack to see in fact that on my page, that's why my page was failing, is I was hitting that null reference exception and it blew up my page. So in this case, it's a pretty easy and straightforward fix. So I'm going to go back to the top and I'm going to stop my debugging session and then I'm going to fix it. So, what's that? And I'm going to use code snippets because you guys don't want to watch me type.
Next up, the work item.
What's that? Okay. So there I've fixed that problem. So I'm going to actually go back to my ops issues, and I'm going to do what I probably should have done in the first place, which is I should have changed. I accepted it. And I've assigned it, and actually, we'll just assign it to Steve for now, but Steve doesn't actually fix all his bugs himself, so, so now I've fixed it.
So, showing the code, but this is a code that you have on your machine compared to the code that the problem
Right. Yes.
So how do you synchronize the
There is a trick here, so which we didn't show. What we have right now, we integrated with symbols, which means that you drop your binaries out there, and those binaries remember where symbols were. Then when Tracy opened up the IntelliTrace on developer machine, which has nothing to do with production. Mm-hmm. We went to appropriate version of that symbols that knows which versions of the code to pick. Yep. Okay.
So
two-step process.
Yep. So
binaries to symbols, symbols to code.
So does that require then always compiling with symbols?
Yes. Yes, if you want to be able to do that kind of debugging in production, yeah. is to make sure you do that.
Yeah, is there any concerns with compiling with symbols, you think?
Well, I was just thinking that maybe it could cause performance to always have symbols.
Good, so it's not.
Okay,
so, no, but that's very important. It will not cause any performance impact because it's not a debug. It's just compiling with symbols.
Yep.
Okay.
And where do the symbols stay stored in TFS?
In symbol server.
In symbol server.
Yep.
It's a share. Yeah.
Okay. So so I'm going to move on to the. So that was the simple one. So now I'm going to move on to this other bug that Victor found, which is essentially a logic bug. And where we actually turned on IntelliTrace on high so that we could collect a lot more information and figure out what's going on with the app and be able to step through it much more in much more detail. So I'm opening up that. And I'm looking, the first thing I see is that there's, you know, as you guys probably know, when you look at ASP.NET apps, there's a bunch of exceptions. And so I'm going to close that up, and I'm going to go right to my web requests. And I know that Victor told me and that the customer page was the one that had the issue. And so I go ahead and click on that, and I've got all the events that are associated with that page. But I don't really want to look at all of them. I actually want to just start, you know, sort of by process of elimination. I'm going to start going through my through these events and see if I can figure out what was going on. So the first thing I'm going to do, because he told me that, you know, I know that the data was wrong, is I'm going to just look at my ADO.NET calls here. So I'm going to just pick the last one, and I'm double-click on that. And then, again, it starts up my debugging session. And what I see here is that I'm, you know, in the code here where I'm getting my customer list from cache and loading it into cache. So I've clearly fallen through this code. And then I build my cache, and then it looks like I actually return my cache. And it says, somebody left a note here, though, saying that they needed to do something here. So this is probably a hint at what might be wrong, but it still should be working because it was working in our tests. So I'm going to go, because you know if it works on your box, it works everywhere, right?
It works fast.
Yes. Yeah. Performance is fabulous. And so I'm going to walk back up the stack, though, and take a look, because I just want to kind of get a hint of what I sent in and what I got back. And so if I look in the locals here, you're going to see that I passed in a 1, and I got back a customer object with an ID of 2. Well, it turns out, actually, that I was pretty naive when I was doing this, and I just assumed that there'd be a 0 based, and so that they'd always match up. And somehow, miraculously, it all worked on my box because I loaded up my database that way, which never happens, right? No, of course it never happens. So that's, you know, basically I've been able to see pretty quickly that what I sent in and what I got back just wasn't what I was expecting. So I'm going to go back to that line of code, and I'm going to go ahead and fix this correctly, because obviously I can't assume that my IDs in my database are going to match my collection, my collection IDs. So I'm going to stop my session, and I'm going to go to my next snippet, and I'm going to put my link query in here so that this way now I always have an ID that's matching properly, so that I should fix that bug. Okay, so now I've got my bugs fixed. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go and run my test, because Peter just walked in, and if I don't run all my unit tests, then, and before I check in, it'll be a problem. So there you go, and I went green, so it means I can check in now. So I'm going to go ahead and hide that. How many of you guys are using all of our new unit testing? Cool. And hide this. And now I'm going to go and look at my pending changes. And I can see that I've got both of my pending changes here. And I'm going to go and ahead and check in. So now I've checked in. And now I'm ready to go ahead and get ready to hand that back to Victor, and let him know that I've finished. What's that?
Can you build?
I am. So I'm going to queue a build up. And I can see I've got a build that's in progress, and it's going through gated check-in. So it's basically going to go through my through the system. It's going to go and run all the tests, the acceptance tests that we have that I'm going to need to run in addition to my unit tests. And then I'm going to, when it's ready, it's going to show up here like it just did. And so now I have a build that's ready to push, right? And I can push it, you know, in a normal situation, I'd be pushing it to test, and then they'd push it forward and so on, right? But I'm going to actually live dangerously, and I'm going to go ahead and mark it for ready for deployment. And at this point now, I'm ready to, now I've basically handed it back and to Victor, and he's going to take it from there.
Yeah, so I'll take it from here, but notice that build quality is now changed to release. Magic happened. So let me explain what just happened, because a lot of things, actually. We have right now used a product called Orchestrator. How many of you even heard about Orchestrator? Oh, perfect. So as a developer, you build a lot of deployment artifacts, MSI, web deploy, DAC packs, you name it. But those are just pieces of an end-to-end deployment process. I don't know, how many of you are doing manual deployments at 8 a.m. on Saturdays? Oh, so okay, good. I've been through those when we were upgrading 3 call centers in Hawaii, St. Louis, and Hartford, Connecticut, and it usually was starting at 8 a.m. when we had a call, turn off AVR to a downtime message, yes, boom, check next checkpoint at 10 a.m. when we upgrading DB and so forth. So it was a very lengthy and hard process with lots of manual coordination. So if you think about it, the Orchestrator is a tool that allow you to automate those manual operational processes in an end-to-end orchestrated workflow. So in this case, we significantly simplify the deployment workflow, like to make it really straightforward. So what it does, it basically waits for build detail for a particular project. And as soon as it sees that the build in ready to deploy status, it just grabs the build and does the deployment and change the status to released. And that's what happened. The workflow could be way more complicated. It could take a snapshot of existing deployment or backup a database and create new VMM forest and service template instance and so forth. So it can do a lot of things. But for the purpose of this demo, the automation that we build is pretty simple and straightforward. That somewhat answers your question. We have a tool that allow you to do a lot of automation, a lot of scripted automation. Now,
Is this a GUI version of build definition?
No, that's a good question. So is it a GUI version of build definition? That's not a GUI version of build definition. This is another tool called System Center Orchestrator that allows you to create create pretty elaborate workflow. And in this case, this is, again, very simple workflow. We set particular parameters to a particular project. We wait indefinitely for a new build in a drop location. And as soon as that build in a particular quality, we basically send some alerts, and we copy files. It's xcopy deployment and so forth. So, but that's a different UI. So now, let me, as an ops guy, I wanna make sure that whatever was Tracy was fixing is actually fixed. So I'm going to reports. Again, since deployment just happened, we bounced boxes behind the scene. And what I would expect to see actually fixed reports right here. So we cross our fingers. We have a hope that Tracy actually fixed it, right? It worked, and oh yeah, that's what she told me. We're getting there. Yeah, it's so.
Yes, well.
It's there. So it actually
well,
fixed.
That's only one, though.
Hold on, that's one. Wait. Let me go to customers. And that was a lot trickier problem. Remember, when I was clicking on Maria before, I was getting Antonio, which is not what I would expect. I'm clicking on Maria. I'm getting Maria. Thanks, Tracy. OK, so we fixed two things. But that's not all. Remember, our goal is MTTR, right? And this is why MTTR is important. So now I validated that those two things are actually fixed. And Tracy didn't go through the complete process inside for that operational incident inside TFS. But what's important is, remember, when Tracy changed the status inside on TFS side, and what you see for this first problem, it changed here. And that's a very important thing. So right now, we are sharing the same context. This is our problem. And this is the ops view on the same problem. And there is a dev view on the same problem. And we share history. So if I go and I click here and look at the history, I see all the changes that have been happening with that either alert or work item. And now, since I validated that it actually fixed, I can close my problem, and it will disappear. Okay? And therefore, that's how I basically close the incident, and that's how we calculate our MTTR. So it's our problem. To reduce the MTTR, it's not just ops guys, it's not just dev guys, it's both of us working together to address our joint business problem. So let me go back to the demo, to the slides.
You could.
But in this case, I would have to have an email client also open. And I would have to refresh that, no? Yeah.
So I'm curious. So you have the system center orchestrator to do your deployment. But when you did your Getty checking, you also deployed there in order to run your ATPs. So why do you have two systems to do deployment?
So the question is, why you have two systems to do deployment? One, to do your Getty checking, and another to do the production deployment.
So, in a perfect world you wouldn't, right? That's where Nirvana, right? Is when we get to a place where we're sharing, you know, the workflows and so on. What we're doing now, though, is our philosophy is to go meet, you know, our customers where they are. And in fact, as they do have two systems, they have dev's way of deploying and their definition of they're done, and then you know you've got operations side. So what we're doing here is coordinating those two workflows. So you know the dev continues and executes on their workflow, and then the operations workflow can pick up you know from where they left off. So I think going forward, it's you know we would like for you know us to have you know I think most people would like to have a system that they're you know with different views on it and being able to actually participate on the same workflow, but
yeah, we're in the beginning of this DevOps journey ourselves. See, you see mostly this is Visual Studio logos here, so next time we do this session, there will be System Center logos there as well. Okay. But let me summarize what you've seen so far. From the ops standpoint, we were able to establish an operational monitoring for applications. And we were able to detect abnormal anomalies, essentially failures, performance degradation, and collect root cause information about those issues and escalate that root cause information to the development and integrate those workflows, those processes together. So an alert inside Ops Manager was turned into an operational issue inside TFS.
And then on the dev side is that as a developer, I was given, you know, actually actionable data. The IntelliTrace logs actually had exactly what happened, and I was able to open up Visual Studio and actually go to it. And in the case of the exception, I was able to go very in a very targeted way and quickly see what the issue is and not have to wade around in a lot of data. And in the case of the logic error, I was also able for those of you who've used IntelliTrace, you might know that there was a subtle difference here, but I'll call it out, is that we actually now carry the parameter information and the inside parameters. So when I went back and I looked at the return value and then the object, the context of the object, that's actually some new feature functionality that we shipped in the last update. So I'm actually much, much more able to quickly diagnose my problems. Was that it? and then I was, you know, able to pretty quickly, you know, go through my deployment and hand it off to Victor. And at the same time, we're always coordinating, right? We're using through our TFS connector, both of us can see where we're at with the problem and keep working towards a resolution until we're done.
That's a good question. So what you see here is essentially integration, direct integration between System Center and TFS. But we have a server manager. How many of you, service manager, how many of you have heard about System Center Service Manager? Okay. So this is a idle kind of system to do your, for example, ticketing. Okay. So technically, those alerts. Right now, we showed very streamlined, very kind of simplified integration between Ops Manager Alert into TFS work item. What you could do, and what typically people do with Service Manager, those alerts that Ops Manager detected that I showed in the beginning would be redirected into tickets inside Service Manager, and the integration would be from the Service Manager to the TFS. Okay?
Yeah.
We just simplified we short circuited the demo.
What about the situation where there's already a fix available and we get an alert in from umpteenth time? Is that able to be pushed out automatically or
a fix available and you're getting. Oh, in this case, you are kind of on-prem with multiple customers.
Yeah,
okay. Then, however you do your deployment and upgrade story, you just, for example, Microsoft has Moo, right? So Microsoft Update. Sorry. How you do that right now? So most likely you have a customer support site with knowledge base that if you have this, this is what is available. I think that's what you have right now.
Mm-hmm. And they'll recognize the error signature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the support center to intercept it to not get the wrong involved in the fix on it. So does an operation manager, can you target endpoints an operation manager can fix on it?
Most likely that scenario would not be directly supported because the ops manager working within inside the enterprise, within inside the data center. In your scenario, what you are saying, there is a someone else's data center, and most likely the internet ports are blocked. Everything is blocked. So in this case, that's a little bit different scenario. It's not Ops Manager will not address your software distribution kind of and remote update problem. That's not the goal.
So we're at our time, and we are starting to lose people. So thank you very much for coming. This is as we Victor said, this is a journey, and we're just getting started. And yes, System Center logo will be up there the next time.
Thank you.